So I'm presenting on if a collaborative diabetes management plan affects self-rated health. We have no relationships to financial relationships to disclose. So diabetes is a pretty serious public health threat. It currently affects, you know, upwards of 6.5% of the population and counting. You know, in the last about 20 years, there's been a, you know, about 164% increase in diabetes prevalence, and it is the leading cause of death in the United States. Diabetes is a very serious threat for people living with serious mental illness, as they are at greater risk for developing it, particularly individuals with schizoaffective disorder, as they are have diabetes at 50% greater prevalence than the general population. And this is primarily a result of the sheer number of barriers there are to having good physical health among people with serious mental illness. People with SMI experience weight gain and obesity. This is often a result of modifiable risk factors such as lifestyle resulting from low socioeconomic status and other reasons, and also negative side effects of psychotropic medications. So there's also a number of barriers to managing and preventing, to not just preventing but also managing chronic diseases. There's a lack of psychoeducation and also I'd like to highlight the separation between health and mental health services as well. But patient-provider collaboration is associated with good general health outcomes among, most people, among people living with diabetes. And by this I mean, just a set of mutually agreed upon set of goals and strategies to achieve them that are calculated by a patient and his or her provider. And this is also believed to improve the diabetes, such a collaborative relationship is believed to improve diabetes self-management for people living with diabetes and a mental illness. This follows the tenets of the recovery movement of have the patient being an equal partner in care. But so little is known about the effects of such a diabetes management plan that's been created collaboratively between a patient and her provider on health of people with diabetes, particularly among people with diabetes and a serious mental illness. So my study asked the two following research questions. Does such a collaboratively made care plan affect the health of people with diabetes? And does such a plan affect the health of people living with diabetes among people with SMI and the general population equally? Taking this information, the background information in the round, I was thinking that people with a collaboratively made plan will be more likely to report good health than those who don't. But for people living with serious mental illness, it might help. I thought it just wouldn't help as much as it would with the general population. My study was drawn from the California Health Interview Survey, the 2009 WAVE. It's perhaps you've heard of it. It's a cross-sectional survey investigating a wide range of health topics. It's representative of the state of California. It's conducted by UCLA and Center for Health Policy Research and other partners. My analysis was conducted in SAS. The CHIS includes sample weights to ensure that estimates are unbiased. So in SAS, I use Proc Survey Logistic. So my sample included individuals whose doctors have told them that they have type 2 diabetes, and it was asked by the question I have on the screen if they've ever been told by their physician or by their health provider that they have diabetes. And then I looked at a subsample, and then I compared a subsample of individuals with serious mental illness who were identified using the Kessler K6. So that was about 235 individuals with diabetes and serious mental illness. I studied the following variables. The primary variable of interest was the presence or absence of a collaborative plan, and it was a single item response: has your health provider worked with you to develop a diabetes management plan? And this was controlling for other elements of guideline concordant care, such as quarterly A1C check, annual foot and eye exam, and lifestyle characteristics, and also demographic characteristics. And my dependent variable was how these things affected the self-rated health of people living with diabetes with and without mental illness. And it was dichotomized into excellent, very good, and good health, or fair, poor health. And this was the purpose of operationalizing it in this manner, was that there were so few people with the serious mental illness category that reported anything besides fair or poor health. And so the model sort of wouldn't really run otherwise. And so just to reiterate kind of what my approach to this study is, that the collaboratively made plan on self-rated health controlling for these other variables. I used logistic, you know, I tested for differences between people with SMI and no SMI, and then I did logistic regression. Using three models, you know, SMI, non-SMI, and both groups combined. So among all people living with diabetes in the California Health Interview Survey, you know, people were about half female, mostly white, about $50,000, and then about average age about 64, which is something that would be typical among a population of people living with a chronic disease like diabetes. It's typically an older population. Most people did have a collaborative plan. Most people were having annual foot and eye exams. Quarterly A1C, which is the ideal, less likely, but that doesn't mean they weren't having it sometimes. And then I would also point out that good health is about 50% of people were reporting good health. And so the differences between those with mental illness and without mental illness is the people with mental illness were less likely to have a collaborative care plan, less likely to have an annual foot check, much more likely to smoke daily, less likely to be white, more likely to be Latino, much less likely to report good health, lower household income, and had diabetes at a younger age. So for this is a multivariate result. The red indicates significance. Red with the black bar indicates that it was a factor that decreased likelihood of reporting good health. So as you can see, among all people with diabetes, having a collaborative care plan was associated with an increase in likelihood of having good health, as was having a provider examine eyes in the last year. However, having feet checked in the last year, smoking, being Latino, or another race or ethnicity were associated with a decrease in likelihood of reporting good health. This same trend can be seen across when the groups were separated, people without serious mental illness, the same variables played out in the same way. So having a collaborative plan, having a provider examine eyes were associated with increase in likelihood of reporting good health. Having your feet checked or being a smoker, being Latino or other race or ethnicity, decrease in likelihood of reporting good health. But for people with SMI and diabetes, this painted a very different picture. Having a collaborative care plan there was no significant results. Having a provider examine eyes in the last year and being Latino decreased likelihood of reporting good health. And an increase in age, interestingly, was associated with an increase in likelihood of reporting good health. So, you know, it's like for those without a serious mental illness, having collaboratively made care management plan was associated. It was with an increase in likelihood in reporting good health. You know, it shows that this is an important part of diabetes management. For people with serious mental illness, this care plan was not helpful. So it's like there's collaboration between diabetes patients with SMI. It's not sufficient support. There needs to be more structure and more collaboration, more structure, other elements of care in place. It was interestingly, among those with mental illness, eye exams were associated with good health, or without mental illness, eye exams were associated with good health. And so it seems that perhaps eye exams were actually preventive and were not detecting complications. However, for SMI, they were associated with a decrease in likelihood of reporting good health. And so it's perhaps eye exams were detecting complications and people were not seeking care until something was really wrong. And this can also be... The same can also be said for an annual foot check. It's like people are not seeking care for whatever reason, and there's a variety of barriers to seeking care until something is really wrong. Also, smoking was associated with poor health in the non-SMI group, but there was no association among the SMI group, which is interesting given the very high number of smokers in the sample. No association. Age and increased... So with age is increasing likelihood of reporting good health among SMI, there are a few explanations for this. Some mental illnesses, schizophrenia, for example, are known to improve with age. There's also the possibility that people are unaware of the extent of physical illnesses, you know, due to limited access of medical care. Or someone I work with mentioned that, well, maybe they have this survivor feeling that they made it this far. So who knows? So and So obesity, it's very, it's pretty serious health risk factor, but it's not associated with health for any group. So it seems sort of like, you know, patient education, lifestyle interventions that support weight loss with diabetes across all groups are pretty essential. And then, of course, across groups, Latinos were less likely to report good health. It's known that Latinos with diabetes are less likely to monitor their glucose levels and have access to healthcare. So this could signify that there are additional barriers to culturally appropriate illness self-management services. And I want to highlight the importance of embedding culturally relevant services into diabetes care for, across groups. It's a cross-sectional study. Another limitation relies on self-reported data. There's no assurance that that self-rated health would correspond with a clinical assessment. With the Latino result, there'd be more depth to that if we knew acculturation status. And then finally, respondents' control of their diabetes isn't known, and this could really influence the way people respond to health questions and their level of attention that would be appropriate to seek from their health provider. So a future direction is chronic disease self-management. This is basically patient education on therapeutic healthcare activities. This has been sort of growing in the last sort of 20 years with KLORG and patient education. These are structured approaches that structured patient education activities that increase health behaviors and improve clinical outcomes. It's been shown to be effective across cultures. And there have now been a few studies showing that chronic disease self-management is effective for people with serious mental illness. So the tide might be moving in this direction. These activities are typically in collaboration with various health providers, physicians, nurses, health advocates, or peers with the same illness history. So, in conclusion, having a collaborative diabetes self-management plan, it can improve self-rated health among people with diabetes, potentially across diverse populations. But people with serious mental illness really do need additional support in managing their diabetes compared to the general population. Policies such as integration of the health and mental health services, particularly putting improving access and availability of high-quality primary care services in community mental health settings, which is the primary area of access for people with serious psychiatric illnesses. Their first point of access, so embedding primary care into mental health settings is one future direction. So thank you.